So when Leah and I wrote the original Indivisible Guide, it was a Google Doc saying, hey, organize locally, focus on your elected officials, pressure them. That's how you actually have power. When we wrote that, part of what we had in mind was fracturing the MAGA coalition to prevent the damage they were trying to do. But the other half of it was helping Democrats find their spines, encouraging them to actually push back, coordinate a unified opposition. And so we find ourselves right now in a really scary place. Look, I'm not going to lie. This isn't just 2017. It's not just the first Trump administration. In many ways, it's quite a bit more dangerous. And also, constituent power is still real. There is only one solution to creeping authoritarianism, and that's democracy, y'all. It's democracy. So we're trying to organize that pro-democracy movement right now all across the country, red states, blue states, purple states.
I'm Kimberly Atkins-Store, and welcome to Justice by Design, where we know justice doesn't just happen on its own. It's done through the hard work of people who are ensuring that the problems that we face as a society find solutions. Right now, more than ever, the idea of resistance is at the forefront. We are seeing our nation's federal government totally be upended. We're still fresh off of an election, which saw Americans take the most partisan stances or divide all of us more than I've seen in my lifetime. And we're all trying to find out what the way forward looks like. And most importantly, what we can do about it. And there is no better person that I can think about to have this kind of conversation in this moment than Ezra Levin, who is the co-founder of the progressive nonpartisan organization Indivisible. Ezra, when I thought about making an episode, and one of many episodes, about how to resist and what that resistance movement can look like, you were one of the first people who came to mind. So I really appreciate you joining me today.
That's so kind, Cam. It's great to be here. Happy to talk.
Sure, sure. So before we get started in the discussion, introduce yourself to our listeners. Let them know who you are and what you do there at Indivisible.
Sure. Hey, everybody. I'm Ezra, one of the co-founders of Indivisible, a co-executive director with my spouse, Leah Greenberg. We started Indivisible, about 8 years ago. It was in the immediate aftermath of the Trump win. And look, I'm a former anti-poverty advocate, worked on homelessness issues in the Bay Area, worked on Capitol Hill. I am a former congressional staffer. Don't hold that against me. After working on Capitol Hill, I did a lot more work doing advocacy, anti-poverty advocacy on the Hill. And that's where I was in 2016, where Donald Trump won the first time. And it wasn't Trump's election that led us to write a guide to how you can organize locally and push your members of Congress and fight back against the Trump administration's agenda. That was half of it. The other half of it, though, was seeing a lack of a unified opposition party out there. We wanted to see national leadership actually pushing back. So when Leah and I wrote the original Indivisible Guide, it was a Google Doc saying, hey, organize locally, focus on your elected officials, pressure them. That's how you actually have power. When we wrote that, part of what we had in mind was fracturing the MAGA coalition to prevent the damage they were trying to do. But the other half of it was helping Democrats find their spines, encouraging them to actually push back, coordinate a unified opposition. And so we find ourselves right now in a really scary place. Look, I'm not going to lie. This isn't just 2017. It's not just the first Trump administration. In many ways, it's quite a bit more dangerous. And also, constituent power is still real. There is only one solution to creeping authoritarianism, and that's democracy, y'all. It's democracy. So we're trying to organize that pro-democracy movement right now all across the country, red states, blue states, purple states.
Yeah. And I think that's important because when I think about resistance, the more I think about that and organizing, in order for that to be effective, the goal has to be clear and it has to be defined. So as you see it in this moment, as you, I think, very correctly laid out, where we are in this moment is one like no other. Yeah. The threat is real and we're seeing it. Its effects happen in real time. What is the goal? Because I think some people misunderstand and just think, well, the goal is to support Democrats or the goal is to be against MAG. That's not the ultimate goal. Like, political parties are a part of the system. Ideologies even some as extreme as MAGA come and go, but you have to have a goal in mind as to what you are fighting for. What do you see as that goal?
Let me answer this a couple ways, because we have a long-term goal, right? We have a long-term goal of a real democracy, a pluralistic democracy, one that actually responds to the will of the people, that provides for the people, that implements policies that are supported by the people. That's where I would like to get to ultimately. And obviously we do not have that right now. We have gerrymandering, we have money infecting politics, and we have a very unified MAGA movement in control of, at the very least, the Congress and the presidency, but also possibly the courts. That doesn't look like a real democracy to me. They're currently in the process of jamming through Congress one of the most unpopular and extreme agendas that I've ever seen. Had 4% approval rating, this Project 2025. I'm not just talking about social and economic policy either. I'm talking about the very underlying workings of our government, the idea of a separation of powers and the idea that Congress controls the purse. It's scary stuff. It doesn't reflect the will of the people. It doesn't reflect the will of the people. So in a long-term way, I would like a representative democracy. That's what I would like to see us move towards. And we got to recognize we don't live in the long-term. When we choose to act, when you wake up this morning, you got to choose what to do today. And what you can do today is based on what are the issues that are currently being debated today, and what power and leverage do you have based on where you live? This is still a democracy in which you vote for a city council person, a state legislature, a senator. Those are your representatives in government all across all forms of government, local, state, federal. Whether or not you can move one of those or replace one of those is based on your own political reality. And you're going to have to figure out, along hopefully with other organized folks in your community, this is where we can have an impact. We can fight for this. We can fight against this. We can organize opposition to that bill. We can organize support for this strategy. But it's going to be different in Akron, Ohio than it is going to be in the River Valley, than it is going to be in Alaska, than it is going to be in San Francisco. The specific opportunities and threats are going to be different based on where you are. And I'm not going to be the guy at the top that says everybody has to do exactly this. It won't work. It's got to be led from the bottom up. You're going to have the expertise. You're smart. You're paying attention to this. So the thing to do, and the thing that I would like to see in the immediate term, is a lot more people leading themselves in this moment. That's my real goal. I want folks organizing and leading themselves, and not just listening to talking heads, but taking it upon themselves to really be the change, to do politics and not just consume politics.
So how does that work? I mean, I know we have probably many of our listeners already know about the guides that Indivisible puts out, but as an organization that is not, as you stated, you're not within the government, you're not, you don't see your position as just bolstering Democrats, but also challenging them too, to do more. But talk a little bit about being an organization outside the system, but trying to change it from the outside.
Gosh, there's so much power in being not an arm of a political party. It gives you a lot more freedom. I think it's a lot of fun, I would say, because you can be a little bit more honest about what needs to happen. You can push people, even your friends. You can encourage them to be better. I really enjoy that role. And I think folks around the country that I've been working with organizing understand the value of existing not as part of the formal structure. There is a rich history in this country of social movements existing alongside but separate from the formal political system. I mean, the suffrage movement, the labor movement, the civil rights movement, these were not arms of the Democratic or Republican parties. They existed separate from and pushed the parties to be better. It's quite effective. That's actually how change does occur. It's not that some Democratic politician wakes up some morning, listens to their better angels, and suddenly you get Social Security, or suddenly you get votes for women, or suddenly you get the Voting Rights Act in 65. No, it's people on the outside pushing government to be better. And so what does that require of us? It just means talking to people, y'all. That's it. You talk to your neighbors, you talk to your friends, you gather in a community center, in a library. You identify what's happening in your community, who does represent you. You focus on them. You ask, well, why aren't they doing this, or why are they doing that? And then you make your voice heard. That's it. Yeah. Make your voice heard. That's it.
And why is that so hard? I mean, I say frequently, Ezra, that I, as a talking head, can get on TV and talk till I'm blue in the face, and the difference that I make will be quite small. I would be giving people who already agree with my point of view confirmation, and the people who don't are probably not paying attention to me in the first place. That the most powerful people in the world in terms of effecting change, making somebody see things differently or bringing somebody on board to a point of view, is their family members, their church members, the people, their neighbors, the people that they see in the grocery store. These are the people that they trust in within their communities. To me, this is what it means by all politics is local. It's hyper local. It's, you know, it's in the family first. So why is it difficult for either people themselves to realize that power? Because people always say they feel powerless, all they have is their vote, and it's like, nuh-uh. And also, why is it so hard for people, I'm looking at Democrats, to really harness that and really understand that this is not done from a establishment top-down point of view, but it's really got to be bottom-up if it's going to be effective?
Great questions. Look, great questions. So I'd say a couple things to this too. One, the system is opaque and difficult to understand by design. You know who wins when people don't understand how power works? You know who wins when people don't understand what the limits of administrative action are? You know who wins when people don't understand the legislative process? The billionaires, the lobbyists, the interest groups, the well-heeled, the people who do know that, and they make a lot of money knowing that. The system doesn't want to respond to public will. There's been a lot of work done to prevent it from responding to public will. Why do we have gerrymandering? Why does that exist? Why is it possible for billionaires to almost buy elections right now? Why is that the reality? Because folks who have had a lot of power in moments where they were able to wield that power, entrenched that power. I think about my home state in Texas. Why did they enact one of the most egregious extreme abortion bans in the country at the same time that they cut back voting rights? Because they didn't want to respond to the public. They knew what they were doing was unpopular. So if you ask yourself, you know, why is it hard for people to actually see this, that they can stand up and organize? Well, the system is designed to make you feel powerless. That's what it is meant to do. But the secret that those in power don't want you to know is it's just not true. Just about every single step forward we have taken as a country has come because some set of people said, well, I guess I've got to do something. And they organized and did it. And I think for those of us who are a little bit deeper into this, who are organizing, one thing that's incumbent on us is not to berate people for not doing it or not say, why are you just now joining the fight? It's to welcome them with open arms. I said I'm from Texas. I'm from the Deep South. We have these big mega churches down there, which I did not go to, but I recognize and could see around. And one really smart thing those big mega churches do is they save the parking spots at the front, the good ones, for newbies who have never come before. How smart is that?
Yeah.
They're thinking about how they build their membership. They're thinking about how they pull more people. And when you get into those big mega churches, you're not going to hear somebody berate you for not coming before. You're not going to listen to some boring sermon that alienates you. It's going to be a party. There's going to be fireworks. There's going to be music. There's going to be cheering. You're going to feel like you found your home. If we want more people doing this work, we need to create that kind of environment for new folks organizing for democracy.
Wow, that's really important. And I think that's hard for people. People, you know, we're humans, we have our emotions. And especially when we are devastated by what we're seeing, devastated by the direction that we see the nation taking, it is hard to say, you know, especially when you've been one of the people, speaking for myself, who has been loud and vocal and out front saying, warning of what might happen. And now it's happening. There is I get the gut instinct to say, okay, yeah. Oh, now you're surprised by what's happening. Oh, now you don't like it. Yeah. But if you are really forward thinking, you have to take people as they are. And if they are willing now to join in, you really have to outstretch a hand. I could not agree with that more. So I want to talk a little bit more about what people can do? Because again, it's the number one question that I'm asked. Yeah. What can we do? You know, we feel powerless. We can't just wait to vote. What if there are no more elections? Like, what can we do? So we happen to be, as we speak, as we're heading into a congressional recess where lawmakers go home back to their districts. We have seen increasingly some lawmakers, lawmakers in the Republican Party, shying away from holding town halls or leaving their own town halls because of how unpopular the things that are happening here in Washington are across the country. As we're recording this too, we are also on the cusp of a government shutdown. We will see that could change minute by minute by the time this podcast posts on Friday morning. But what should people be thinking as we head into this congressional break? How can they make their voices heard? Because that's exactly what, if you'd remember, congressional breaks weren't just meant to give lawmakers time off. It was meant for them to go home and, and interface with their constituents. This is what their job is supposed to be. In fact, it's the most, it's more important in a lot of ways than what they do when they come here to Washington and cast votes. So what is your strategy for this congressional recess?
First of all, Kim, can I just say, I love this question because I think it is the right question. It's not just what should we think or what should we understand, but what can we do? Look, I want folks to be informed. I want people to understand the issue. A big thing that we do at Indivisible is try to demystify, you know, the complex congressional procedures so people can know what's going on. But we have such a bias towards action. We want people to actually take that information and do something, not so that they can feel about good about themselves that, hey, I did the thing and I'm a good person now, but because that's important for changing things. We want to identify meaningful action. I'm never going to tell you to go sign an online petition so you feel good that you had the right idea. That's not going to help us. I am going to tell you, hey, you can push your member of Congress in this way today because today they're trying to make a decision. And actually, this airing Friday morning, couldn't be better timing, Kim. Could not be better time. So I'm going to talk about both recess, which is coming up, but we're in a live fight right now. The Republicans in Congress have put forward a funding bill with a lot of goodies for MAGA in it. It increases funding for ICE and for defense. It cuts other funding. It does nothing to control what Elon Musk is doing and his raid of the federal government. It's something that's accepted by everybody from Marjorie Taylor Greene to MAGA Mike Johnson. They love it. And they have told Democrats, vote for this bill, otherwise we'll shut down the government. That is what they have said. And right now, as of this moment, as you said, it's going to change minute to minute. I don't know where it will be 10 minutes from now. It's very much up in the air. We don't know if Dems are going to say, no, we're going to vote for a clean funding bill, or you're going to have to find the vote somewhere else, or if they're going to cave, if they're going to give the Republicans the vote they asked for. Currently, Senate Democrats are very worried about in any way being blamed for a shutdown if it happens. And so that might drive them to say, well, we don't want any part of this, so we're going to give Republicans the votes. They're also worried about their constituents being angry at them for caving for a bad bill. So this is a situation, and it doesn't always come, but this is a situation where pressure, especially if you have a Senate Democrat, right now is really helpful. They are trying to decide which way to go. And so if you've got a Senate Democrat who has announced they are against the GOP funding bill, awesome. Give them some positive reinforcement. Give them a call. If you've got a Senate Democrat who hasn't announced, or like John Fetterman, he's the only one so far who has announced that he's going to support the Republican bill, call them and tell them how disappointed you are and prepare for next week, which, as you said, is congressional recess. Now, we had a pretty wild congressional recess last February, just last month. Yeah. It was great. Members of Congress were showing up, including some Republican members of Congress. They were actually facing their constituents. Now, these weren't in swing districts because they're not showing up, but they were in deep red districts. They were going and holding these public events. And what we saw in these deep red districts were Republicans and independents and Democrats, their constituents, show up and say, why the heck are you supporting this guy, Elon Musk? Why are you firing veterans? Why are you coming after our Social Security? They got pushback. And they got so much pushback, Kim, that the result is exactly what you said. They criticized it as all fake. And they said, well, we're not going to show up anymore. Okay, look, you're right. You don't have to show up anywhere that you don't want to show up. You can hide from your constituents. What you can't hide from, though, is accountability. At least you can't if we apply pressure. So I know what a lot of local Indivisible groups are doing are putting together empty chair town halls in these Republican districts. So they reserve a room. They invite their friends, their family, other constituents, elected officials, They invite the local press and they'll invite the member of Congress. And if that member of Congress chooses not to show, they are ready with a cardboard cutout or somebody in a chicken costume or a clown costume. And then the message from those events is not just that this is an extremist supporting Elon Musk. The message is this is a coward, unwilling to face their own constituents while they do work in Washington, D.C. to undermine those constituents' interests. This is what's known as a tactical innovation or a tactical escalation. And we do this when we're being effective. We are effective, which means they are adapting and we have to respond to their adaptation. I'm excited for it. I can't wait. If you are in a Republican district, I hope that you find one of those events. If you're in a Democratic district, I hope they are holding a public town hall and you go and express your opinions.
Yeah, that's so important too, because another thing I hear a lot is disappointment in the lack of urgency, the lack of clear plan from Democrats in this moment too, that this idea that they are being timid. Yeah. And as somebody who's covered Washington politics for a long time, that is sort of emblematic in how Democrats move. Democrats strategize, they hold meetings, they consult with consultants, they do all the things before they decide, if they decide, what the next move will be. And the next move will probably be far short of what is necessary to get the job done. That's one of my biggest frustrations with Democrats, honestly. So how can people on the ground message to Democrats to tell them, no, we don't want caution. We don't want political calculus, right now. We want democracy is on fire and we want you to do everything that you can do right now to protect it without worrying, without taking 13 polls about how this might affect the midterms. How do they do that?
Look, I think you're diagnosing something really real, which is in the lizard brain of many Democrats. There's this general instinctual response to this of, whoa. Let's look at what the polling says. Let's not go too fast. We don't want to use too strong a language. That is something. But they are not just driven by their lizard brain. This is what I would say, Kim. They also have the prefrontal cortex. They've got this other part of their brain that can think. And we got to reach that part of their brain too. Let me tell a story. In June of 2017, this is when protest was the new brunch, right? Everybody was out there pushing back against. There were marches all the time. People were showing up. We were trying to get Senate Democrats to use procedural maneuvers to slow down the attempt to repeal the Affordable Care Act in the Senate. Mitch McConnell then was trying to jam it through as quickly as possible. Our ask to Senate Democrats was withhold unanimous consent. That's a fancy way to slow things down in the Senate. Withhold unanimous consent so that we can delay this through the July 4th holiday, where there will be public events with Republican senators like a Susan Collins or at the time a John McCain. We'll show up there and we'll push them to oppose the repeal. If we can't apply that public pressure, I don't know if we're going to be able to stop this. And I remember vividly, I was on the phone with Senator Schumer's staff on that day and said, we'd like you to withhold consent. They said, well, we understand, but the senator's not ready to move forward with that. And I said, that's fine. We're going to have folks at every single one of your offices in the state of New York and at the offices of Senate Democrats all over the country this week. And they're either going to be asking you and celebrating you for withholding consent, or they're going to be protesting you and pushing you to do that. We left the phone with no decision. The next day, Senator Schumer announced that they were withholding consent. I think there is some idea that the challenge we're facing with the Democrats today is somehow new and unprecedented. It's not new. It's not unprecedented. We've been through this before, but we can get them to our side. It requires us doing the organizing work necessary. So when I look at a recess next week, I see that as a huge opportunity because there are some Democrats who are fighting the good fight right now. You've got a Maxwell Frost, right? You've got a Jasmine Crockett. You've got an Ocasio-Cortez. Chris Murphy is saying a lot of good things in the Senate. You've got folks who are indeed fighting this fight. We need to be cheering them on. They are our heroes that we need to rally around and show a lot of love for. We've got others that are not working with us. They need to hear from us. They need to hear there are consequences for them being so distant from where their base is. And I'm telling you, Kim, if we do a good job organizing that, carrots and sticks, you can't always be yelling. You got to praise when the praise is justified, and you got to give sticks as well when it's not. You got to tell them that you're disappointed. That combination is what moves members of Congress, because fundamentally, They don't want to be yelled at. They don't want to disappoint all their constituents. They want to be praised. They love giving speeches and getting love. We got to show them that that is the future we want to build together. I'm not interested in spending the next year and a half yelling at Dems for disappointing me. I want to be rallying around a unified opposition party, but I'm not going to accept less than that.
Yeah. And I think what's so important about that point that you're making is right now, why has the Republican Party become the party of Trump, where the real goal is fealty and loyalty to him? It's because they don't have the policies that are popular. So their power is in their unity, and purpose, and, you know, in their billionaires and stuff too, who can help influence elections that way. What the Democrats' best asset is more, the majority of the American people better favor what they're talking about than what the MAGA Republicans are doing right now. What MAGA Republicans are doing is unpopular writ large across America.
That's
so
right.
Why that is the power. I mean, I know people feel powerless, but you are in the majority, not just in terms of how you voted, but you're in the majority in terms of how you think about what's going on. And so, yes, dialing a number to a congressional office may not feel like it makes a difference. But one thing that I appreciate about what you're doing and organizations like Indivisible is that they are creating an infrastructure for those voices to not even amplify them, just to actually get them to the level that they actually represent in terms of the American people. It's actually to, because it's easy to ignore people and take them for granted. Democrats have been doing this for a long time. This is why I have not belonged to any political party for more than 20 years. Like, they take folks for granted. They harness excitement without actually putting policy behind it. If you have organization of the American people outside of that system that is pushing on them to say, no, this isn't what we want. We want you to get a backbone and listen to us and push back against these policies that we think are abhorrent. I think that can be really effective. There is strength in numbers. And I think go ahead.
No, you are hitting on something that is foundational to how Indivisible is organized. We are not like a national nonprofit with a big email list. We are a national nonprofit with a big email list. That's not what gives us power as a movement. Right. Our unit of activism is not the individual. Heck, I want people to call their member of Congress, take a second, do it. That is a tactic.
Yes.
That is a tactic. What we're trying to do is organize at the community level. The beating heart of Indivisible are 1,500 to 1,600 local Indivisible groups that are locally led, owned and operated by volunteers who are building up that power themselves. And that's what allows us to actually push. In this democracy that we all live in right now, individuals have very little power. Unless you're super rich or super famous, you don't have much power. But groups of individuals do. There is strength in numbers. And that's because of how the constitutional republic is structured. We vote for representatives. That's what we do. And those representatives represent geographic areas. And those geographic areas have lots of constituents. If you are an organized group of constituents, hey, that's power. That is power right there. And by power, in organizing circles, the word power can almost take on a mystical form. Like, you'll hear it a lot. Let me make it really simple. Power is the ability to get someone or some institution to do something they would not otherwise do. That's all power is. That's all it is. So when you get a group of people in your Indivisible group or your other local community group together, and you say, city council person, I know you're not with us on this, but we need you to vote, and we're going to be showing up at your office unless you do. And then they do. That's power. You just witness power in action. That's all it is. And we see it repeatedly over the course of the last 8 years that we've been doing this, that things that at the time when we started organizing for them were impossible, never going to happen, suddenly they become inevitable. It was always going to turn out that way. And the difference is people actually organize themselves and push for it.
Now, so where can people find local Indivisible groups?
Well, they can probably find them in their local paper because they're getting so much coverage. They're out there so much right now. But if you don't know if there's an Indivisible group, 73 have formed in the last week. all around the country. There are about 15 or 1600. They're in red states, they're in blue states, they're in purple states, they're in urban areas, suburban areas, rural areas. We cover about 98% of congressional districts all over the country, from Alaska to Maine, Florida to Texas. If you don't know where yours is, go to indivisible.org. You can put in your zip code and find one. If you find one, but it's not your jam, start your own. Get a couple people together. You can do this. The entire movement has been started by people who looked around and said, I guess nobody else is going to organize my community. I'll do it. It's up to us.
All right. Ezra Levin, co-founder of Indivisible, thank you so much for joining me today for this conversation.
Great to be here, Kim.
One point that I really love that Ezra made is underscoring how all politics is local. It really is. It's not just in terms of the fact that the grassroots originate on a local level, but it's even about what local officials are doing. I love how he said that it's just as important that you organize and make your voices heard to your city councils and your town councils and your school boards and other things too. I just wrote a column about the need for people to tell their local and state officials that they want sound vaccine immunization policy to keep their kids and schools and communities safe in the face of the federal government that is abdicating their duty in that space. It is important to talk to your local and state officials about election protections, to know that your vote will be safe and secure amid a national effort to make that harder. There's so much happening on a local level all the way up to the top, but it's local politics that affect your lives so much more, and it has a ripple effect across the whole country. So if joining Indivisible or some other group as they activate and organize everyday citizens is your jam, then that's one of the many ways to all the people who are asking what to do that you can engage. But the importance too is to stay engaged, and however small it might feel, take those actions. Those actions are important. We are seeing the fruit of them play out in the resistance as we see it grow. We can't expect that to come from Washington. It's got to come from you. I'm Kimberly Atkins-Store, and thank you for joining me for another episode of Justice by Design. If you like this podcast, give the pod 5 stars wherever you get your podcast, because that helps other people find it. And if you want to see our conversations, head over to the Politicon channel on YouTube, where you can see this conversation and every other one I've had since starting this pod. That's all for now. I'll see you next week with another episode of Justice by Design.